Our next guest is Art from Philly. His website is noplaceforcorruption.com. Art, welcome to the program.
And thank you for bringing me on board, Deanna. And hello, RBN. Good to hear from everybody.
Yeah, it's been so long. I don't know, time flies when you're having a good time. I don't know about the good time part, but time certainly does fly, right?
Yes, we're definitely living in interesting times, that's for sure.
Could they be any more interesting? Amazing. Amazing.
Yes.
So, what's going on in your life?
Well, how do you want me to proceed for the guy? I mean, I sent you information there on Deep Politics by Peter Dale, and I can connect the dots there, how Obama and how Biden rose to power.
Sure. I think that's always a good place to start. I love history, even if it's a very contemporary history. Anything that happens in politics affects the everybody else. The politicians are corrupt. They are running a corrupt system, which impacts everybody's life. And
right.
Certainly across the board. It doesn't matter which party. They're both two wings of the same vulture, in my opinion.
Right. So, basically, I live in the Philadelphia area. Since I've been 12 years old, and that's over 50 years ago, I've been exposed to organized crime. When I was a young kid, it was mostly Italian. Starting after the fall of John Gotti, the dominant factor became the Cosa Nostra, Jewish Mafia. So one of the things to look at this is, first of all, you look at the creation of Federal Reserve Bank. Now, when they dedicated in the late 80s, the Holocaust Museum in Philadelphia, which is on the east side of Independence Mall there, they had Benjamin Netanyahu there, along with his buddy he grew up with from the Philadelphia era, Stephen Friedman, a little law firm, Duane and Morris. So Netanyahu said back in the, 1910-1920 era, that our people created the Federal Reserve Bank, okay, the IRS, and the Anti-Defamation League. Okay? So what he's referring to was the creatures of Jekyll Island, one of which was Jacob Schiff of Kuhn and Loeb, okay, which merged into Shearson American Express, which went under when a financial mortgage meltdown in 2008. And who emerged out of that?
Could I just interfere or interject something? That this whole Jekyll Island thing, probably they did meet. Probably these people met in a number of places, but the Federal Reserve was created by Congress. By both houses of Congress, if you read the documentation from when it was passed, the story goes that everybody went on vacation, Christmas vacation. But if you look at the original documents, there was a full quorum or enough of a quorum that both the House and the Senate passed the Federal Reserve Act. And since that time, they have been using it. They could suspend the Federal Reserve Act, but it isn't who controls the Federal Reserve. It is who controls Congress. And if you own Congress, which uses the Federal Reserve as a whipping boy.
Right.
But it's a documentation. And somebody said, oh, they need to audit the Federal Reserve every year. It is audited every year. The country is a corporation. we have been lied to by politicians since the Articles of Confederation were done away with.
It does trace back to that point.
Yeah, it does. And it's been going downhill since then. They're just a bunch of liars, okay? That's what they do. Liar and politician are synonymous.
Right. But what we're seeing from that, the way the economy's working, it's the 1% of 1% that seem to be doing quite well at the expense of everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sucks.
So I wanted to bring insight into the Power Control Group.
Okay.
Which was the book called Taken of America 1-2-3. So to finish up in one or two sentences, Shearson fell apart due to the mortgage meltdown in 2008. Who came out of that? The two top guys. Peter Peterson and Steven Schwarzman, who formed the Blackstone Group. And what did they do? They basically went to places like Arizona, bought up all the residential real estate that went down under, and made themselves a fortune. And became
so Arizona is McCain country, right?
Right. Which is the Bronfman Syndicate boys up there in Paradise Valley.
Right.
Right. Yeah, the Hensley family, you know. But when you say that, it's really a satellite of the Chicago boys, the outfit, as is Pennsylvania, which is run by the syndicate for decades. Okay. So the other thing to look at is the evolution of the race wire. Okay. And I don't know if I sent you the article, but you can find it on the web real quick. If you look at the race wire wars, during the Capone era, what they did is to get control of betting, to make the money off of it, they worked closely with companies like AT&T, which was brought up by the McKeever investigation of organized crime, to control the wire service that was transmitting the information of who was winning and losing, you know, in the horse races across the country, as an example, but all kinds of betting, off, you know, basically remote betting. And they've been making money hand and foot over that for all the way up to the present time. Now, who was behind that? Okay. Well, there's an interview by James Reagan. James Reagan took over control of the race wire. And he basically identified three people in the Chicago outfit that were really running the show. He said Henry Crown, okay, runs General Dynamics, okay, Walter Annenberg, okay, and who was the third one? The Hiltons. So if you understand that power structure, you can start to see why we have things as they are today. It's a natural evolution of this corruption that's been going on for decades. And the power base, definitely, from what I've seen in the Philadelphia area, is definitely coming out of Chicago. Okay. In addition, the other influence from an external influence is definitely coming through Netanyahu and the boys in Israel affecting our policies. So when you look at what was Walter Annenberg, okay, his father, Moses, was with Capone. That right after the St. Valentine's Massacre, they went to Atlantic City and set up the National Crime Syndicate. And there were close members there. Another close ally in deep politics by Peter Dale identified was Walter Annenberg's closest friend was Meyer Lansky. Okay? So, now what happens is, let's bring it forward to the JFK assassination. JFK rose to power. And that was a corrupt election, by the way. I mean, Nixon probably won the election, but the influence of Joe Kennedy Sr.'s influence with organized crime, especially with the Bonanno crime family, is how he rose to power. And Joe Kennedy made a deal with Joe Bonanno to have Chicago vote for JFK. Now, when he was assassinated, with respect to the organized crime part of who was involved, it was Santos Traficante, Carlos Marcellus.
But wasn't Joseph Kennedy really influenced when he was serving as a in Europe as what was he? He was over in Europe.
He was the ambassador to the United Kingdom.
He was a diplomat. Yeah.
Right. Which, by the way, subsequently after that point, Walter Annenberg became the ambassador to the United Kingdom. And the one he's vying for right now is David L. Cohen, the number two guy at Comcast, who was their top lobbyist, who retired, and is the power broker for Biden. But we'll get into that as we progress a little bit further.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so when you look at the National Crime Syndicate, what happened there was another person was there, was Anna Citron. That was a cover story of that meeting for setting up the National Crime Syndicate in Atlantic City with Nikki Johnson, or whatever his name, the mayor of Atlantic City. And just by the way, I have a friend who was a lawyer who handled elder care law, and this is in Bucks County. This happened back in, I don't know, right around 2010. Lady walks in, says her mom has dementia, so it's a mother-daughter team. Says to him, my mom's came in, kind of infamous. Daughter's name was Sandra Lombardo. So they get the Medicare benefits for the mom to go in a nursing home. They had to verify who she was, and it took them, you know, several months. They actually verified who the person was. And the person was Anna Citron, suffering from severe dementia. That was Meyer Lansky's first wife, who was there at the Atlantic City conference. So we saw that happen. Another point in my area is we have a judge, Alan Rubenstein. And I met him once, more than once, but I asked him one time, I said, are you related to Jack Rubenstein? And he says, yes, he's my brother's father. He's a brother of my father.
Yeah, Jack Ruby is who you're talking about, right?
Jack Ruby, right. Okay. So that goes to, let's summarize, you know, what I summarized the JFK assassination. I don't care at this point, you know, you can argue who shot him and all that, but the reality is, let's look at the politics that fell out of that. You know, who was the power control group that took over that? And it was a book called Taking Over America, 1, 2, 3, where they talk about this power control group, which is what we're talking about, the 1% of 1%.
And you know that they altered his route after he got to town, after he arrived in Dallas.
Right.
They, at the very last minute, they altered the route. And it's very interesting about the pictures that were taken in front of the school suppository.
Right.
The school depository, that's funny.
yeah, right.
I guess right. It could go either way, right?
Yes, right. I mean, the thing to note there, during the assassination, you notice one person who ducked was LBJ. LBJ was put in the power as at the request of Joe Bonanno. Okay? And if you read the book by Modella called The Hoffa Wars, he identified there was a breakup in organized crime around 1962, what they called the Northern Mafia and the Southern Mafia of the United States. And who was in charge of the Southern Mafia was Joe Bonanno, one of the original founders of the crime syndicate. Mm-hmm. But he also identified there are three underbosses, which were Traficante, you know, Santos Traficante, Carlos Marcellus, and Sam Giacano. Okay? But somehow, even to this day, people say Joe Bonanno had nothing to do with the assassination of JFK. I think he had quite a bit to do with it, but that's never been identified in history. You always see him pushing, you know, the single bullet theory, which, you know, most people don't believe at this point, nor should
well,
they.
Well, what about the killing of the king scenario?
Where
could you cover that, or have you covered that, or thought about that, or and the same people that did that did JFK probably did JFK Jr.
Correct. Right. Yes. Well, again, now you're talking about the CIA component of the assassination also. The CIA basically only plays for corruption since they played a role in the assassination of JFK.
Right. Right. But a specific person did. Okay. His last name starts with a B.
Okay, tell me who it is because I don't know that part of it.
George H.W.
Oh, well, yeah. Right. You're jumping ahead of what I know.
Okay.
In the assassination of JFK, you have the deathbed confession of E.J. Hunt, okay? And he draws a diagram.
Mm-hmm.
And he draws a diagram to Kurt Meyer, okay? And it's what's not drawn in that diagram, which Joe Bonanno says, in our circle of organization, that's what's not said, which is really important to understand.
Right, and I never did. After looking at all of the stuff, I thought, I don't believe that. I think that's a red herring kind of a thing.
What, you mean Fort Myers diagram? E.J. Hunt's diagram.
The Hunt situation. He was dying anyway, so why not take the blame? Why not shift the focus away from the actual shooter?
Well, I'm looking at the power control group.
Okay.
I didn't identify who was the actual shooter.
One thing
to shoot the guy. It's another thing to have the power to cover it up and have the power of the government to cover up a presidential assassination. That's a whole entirely different level of control, and that's the part I focused on. Now, who is powerful enough to control all this, to cover it up and take control of the government?
And who was in charge of the CIA afterwards?
Well, that's what I'm getting to. Okay, so I want to...
Okay.
All right, you jumped ahead a little for it. If you look at the diagram that Mr. Hunt would draw, it basically mentions Morales or whatever it is. What's important there is understand what's not in that diagram and what you mentioned. Who was the head of the CIA at that point? Operation Zapata, the Bay of Pigs affair. George Herbert Bush.
Yes.
He was definitely part of it, right? And we've seen it at the Texas book depository.
Yes. Right? His picture was taken, yes.
Right. Now, who was working with Kurt Meyer? Do you have any idea? How did he become so famous in the CIA? What was he doing? That's the part that's important to understand.
Right. Wasn't he dealing with, this was a side issue kind of a thing. But Gloria Steinem and that group was also a part of this, which was sort of a changing of the way that people viewed women's role in society was altered. Correct?
Right. You're talking about now Freedom of Fascism by Aaron Russo when he was interviewed with Bill Rockwell.
Not necessarily. Just doing a study of her history and what she did, and her association with Betty Friedan and what they did for the CIA, and she had a connection to Gordon Meyer.
Right. And his wife was assassinated on the canal in Washington, D.C. A year or two after the JFK assassination.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And she was identified as mistress of JFK. She was the one at in Dallas there that was holding the umbrella that was basically her signal to say hello to her, to JFK. It was a mistress. All right. Now, here's where it gets interesting. What do you know of Operation Mockingbird?
Operation Mockingbird?
Yes.
Let's see. I've read about it, of course. And know about the brainwashing tactics. Is that where you're going?
No.
Okay.
Operation Mockingbird was set up by the CIA after World War II to gain control of American media.
Okay? Right, brainwashing.
Right. And it was controlled under the domain of Cord Meyer. And who was he working with? Walter and Moses Annenberg.
Okay? Wow.
The son of Moses Annenberg, who was directly linked to Meyer Lansky and Al Capone, and was at the Atlantic City Conference to set up the National Crime Syndicate. That's who he was. Okay? The same guy that James Reagan identified before he was murdered and assassinated, and it was written up in the Drew Reports, the reporter that talked about it, that identified Walter Annenberg, the Hiltons, Conrad Hilton, and Henry Crown as the most powerful components of the Chicago outfit, not Tony Arcata, as people are told. Now, what did Walter Annenberg do? He was responsible for, in a big part, not a minor way, in setting up the Warren Commission, the single bullet theory.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I'll explain that, but I just want to hear your understanding. What do you understand of how the Warren Commission was set up with getting Spectre there to create the single bullet theory?
Oh, wasn't it awful? Yes, I've read a lot about it. And it was, all commissions are compromised. The government sets up a commission in order to clarify it, in order to allegedly clarify it for the public. Because if the public sees, oh, the government set up a commission. And they set up a commission every time there's alternative beliefs. And they've done this throughout history. They set up a commission to see who did what. And the public just accepts it. They accept whatever, most of the public accept whatever the commission says, even if the commission is wrong. Like the 9/11 commission, all these commissions, Warren Commission, go back in history, you see it time and time again.
Right. So it was Lyndon Baines Johnson, who was put in power by the Bonanno crime family, to be Vice President of the United States, working with Joe Kennedy Sr. as part of their reason why they supported JFK. And with respect to that, we have the conversations, and they're on YouTube, where you hear Lyndon Baines Johnson talking to Hoover, and saying, we got to have a commission set up here and prove a single bullet theory. Okay, that happened. That was, you listen to recordings there. You also have recordings there that basically hear LBJ talking to Hoover and say, why did you tell Robert Kennedy Sr. that me and him have some close friends with Hoffa? Okay. All right. Now, with respect to Hoffa, right after the JFK assassination, he called Sanford Trafficante down in Florida when Carlos Marcellus was there, and their lawyer, whose name was Reagan also, different Reagan from the guy we're mentioning up in Chicago. And basically, Hoffa says, we did it. We finally got rid of the SOB. So that's an interesting part of it.
Now,
okay. Now, realize in southeastern Pennsylvania, we have the pioneers of TV, okay, which was the Annenbergs, you know, the Sarnoffs and all that. They created TV, the TV shows back in the 50s. Most people don't realize, looks like we got a break.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Okay, we'll be right back.
Right. Thank you.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
And he is Art from Philly. His website is noplaceforcorruption.com. That's an interesting title. How did you come up with that?
Basically, way I came about this was I protested the No Place for Hate program in Evanston, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and I identified it to the local government. This is a front for organized crime, the Brockman Crime Syndicate. And I said, you know, they registered me as a hate member by the Anti-Defamation League for pointing it out. I actually protested in front of them. I said to them, I said, this is the mafia you're bringing in here with this program. Where's your integrity? And they said, well, there's no mafia. Really? I'll tell you what. I'll bet you $10,000 to a dollar that is the mafia. Anybody want to take me up on a bet? So in front of the entire commission of the board for the community, nobody took me up. One guy says he'll do it, and the others don't do it.
Right.
Okay. Right. And then I got registered as a hate criminal with the Anti-Defamation League for pointing that out to him.
Mm.
So that's how this came about. That's what, so I did it as a protest in No Place for Hate. I called it No Place for Corruption.
Sounds good. Okay.
Right. So getting back to the story, Pioneers of TV, okay, which was really a front of Operation Mockingbird, taking control of the media back in the 60s, you know, with, you know, you can see that with Paley, so in the 50s, actually.
Right.
So you can see the CIA doing it. All right. Now, one of the TV shows to Walter Annenberg, by the way, was what they call that, Romper Room. Okay? And the one who ran Romper Room was Claire Schweiker. Okay? And she ran it for several years. Prior to the JFK assassination on what they call WPVI TV, the local community here in mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. Claire Schweiker was the wife of Richard Schweiker. Okay? Now, who appointed Sprague Inspector to the Warren Commission? Richard Schweiker. Okay? Who was he meeting socially almost every weekend? Because his wife worked for Romper Room, working directly under Walter Annenberg, was Richard Schweiker. Who was Walter Annenberg working directly with? Court Meyer of the CIA, Operation Mockingbird.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, let's look at the history of Sprague Inspector real quick. And also it points directly to Ed Rendell, which points also to how Biden got the power, as we'll get progress a little further. Spector and Sprague, along with Rendell, were district attorneys for the city of Philadelphia. Okay. And that was going back for Sprague Inspector back in the Dilworth administration, mayor of Philadelphia back then. It was so corrupt when they were building the art museum. He lost all the money for building the middle part of the structure. You know, if you ever saw the TV show, movies of Rocky going up there, they had to basically get more money to get the art museum built because of this corruption. There was a group of bootleggers that were in Conshohocken, a community adjacent on the west side of Philadelphia, called the Ciccoleone family. And they were the bootleggers from the 20s all the way up to the 70s. They were finally taken to task, arrested, and all that. And they took over Conshohocken. The local Montgomery County detectives did it. They had their own detective run as mayor for 10 years to clean up the mess. But the part they didn't catch was the Ciccoleone family paid off high-value political figures with the Trackahomes Way, with an area they call the End of the Falls. And who were the neighbors there? Dilworth, Spector, and none other than Rendell. Okay. Sprague. Mm-hmm. Sprague basically has a financial company called R&S Financial Services. There was a guy named Tony Kolodz back in the 70s who was selling coal mining equipment up in the Poconos. So he was approached by R&S Financial. They wanted to buy his equipment. It was worth several $100,000. So he goes down there with his wife to their office. Spector's in the room and then his assistant's there. So they wanted him to sign over the title of the equipment without any financial remuneration. Spector leaves the room, and then what happens next for the next hour is his assistant of R&S Financial Services holds Tony's wife in a headlock with a gun to her head, says, if you don't sign, you're not getting out of here alive.
Wow.
So at the end of the hour, they let him
rough.
Go. Yeah, they do play it rough. Okay. So at the end of that hour, they leave the office, go to the elevator. His wife has a stroke and ends up in a wheelchair for the rest of her life until she dies. Okay? Spector, who's a relative of mine. This happened around 1980. She was dating a kid who turned out to be a drug dealer in Bensalem, Pennsylvania, which is on the north side of Philadelphia. And she goes to the lawyer, Charles Peruta Sr., who passed away. And basically the dialogue goes like this. Good day, Mr. Hogan. I see you got caught dealing drugs. Good thing you got caught in Bensalem, Pennsylvania. You're protected by Arlen Specter. So here's the top criminal defense lawyer of Philadelphia identifying Arlen Specter as protecting drug smuggling operations coming out of Pennsylvania. So that's the character of these two guys who created the single bullet theory, if there is any character with them. All right. So let's see, we covered the JFK assassination from that point of view. Now, there was another part of this. There was a fundraiser for Arlen Specter to become reelected for a Senate race in 92. So they have the fundraiser in Bucks County, with a place they call Bowman's Hill, near Trenton, not too far away from where they, Washington crossed the Delaware for the Battle of Trenton. And the fundraiser was hosted by George Herbert Walker Bush, you know, speaking there to say, you know, support Arlen Specter, you know, support his campaign to be reelected. And if you read the last paragraph of that directly from the George Herbert Walker Bush Library, the last paragraph identifies who was attending there. Okay? It was Walter Annenberg with the M.L. Annenberg Foundation money. Okay? It was Herbert Barnes, who was running the Bucks County Republican Party. Okay? And Joe Paterno. Okay? Which ties it right back into the second mile. So that happened in 92. So if you actually, you know, if you look, you know, one couldn't see all the facts back right after the assassination, but after the fact, you know, you gather the facts, you can see, putting two and two together, you can actually see how this came about. So now we want to progress a little further. So let's see, is there anything else? Is there anything that you have identified we should bring up directly with the JFK assassination over what I said?
No. Okay. But one thing you said that has always irked me. Why do all these presidents have to have a library? None of them ever did anything that would constitute having a library, as if they were somehow educators or that they had such a collection of knowledge that it had to be housed in a taxpayer-funded building for we can't say all eternity, but what the heck? It just, I think one book, let's create a book about the president or whatever. But to have a library that the taxpayers fund, of course, when you think about it, the taxpayers fund everything. When you think about it, and I've been listening to a gentleman, a legal man, and I've had him on the program, The government consists of a group of people who are living off of other people who really don't have the authority to extract taxes or anything else. It's just one group of parasitic people who figured out a way to exploit the rest of the population in any given country.
I agree with you. Okay. So I was going to progress a little further.
Go ahead. Okay. I'm sorry, I can't change it.
No, that's good. And I will talk about the lab real quick. Let's obviously, during the end of the LBJ administration, he was involved with the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy. That was a CIA job. And there was over 200 people assassinated, plus Martin Luther King. Okay?
Right. Absolutely.
Right. Right. So even his own family, Martin Luther King's family, it doesn't believe James L. Ray did it at all. Okay? So if you look at the picture of the assassination, you have this woman pointing up, identifying where the shooter was. That they claim was James L. Ray shooting from there, the sniper's nest. Okay? But an interviewer, a reporter, tracked her down, and 20 years later found out she was working for the CIA, even 20 years later. Okay? Also had, I believe it was Colonel Lansdale was there, who was identified as one of the people that may have been involved with Bay of Pigs and the JFK assassination. So, it's as far as believing that Martin Luther King was not assassinated by James L. Ray, then who did it? Most likely the CIA. Or it could have been a joint operation between the CIA and the mob, because Martin Luther King was trying to unionize the trash workers.
CIA and mob are synonymous.
Right, right. And that actually started with the OSS. Okay.
Right.
Right, so we'll review that real quick. What happened is Operation Underworld, at the beginning of Second War, yet Albert Anastasia sank the ship, the Normandy, okay, in New York Harbor. And that was used as a ploy to spring Lucky Luciano, okay? And the Navy was basically in a panic. They were losing like 80 ships a month at that point. That was right at the point of Pearl Harbor within a month or two of that time frame. So the Navy worked with Moses Polakoff, the lawyer for Meyer Lansky, who was the intermediary between Lansky and Luciano, to get the cooperation of Luciano to help win World War II. And the cooperation came about in providing intelligence to General Patton on where to win the Battle of Sicily, Operation Husky. Okay. That's probably the reason why General Patton was assassinated. He knew too much about what was going on at the end of the war.
Oh, that's a given. Absolutely. They murdered him. Otherwise, he would have come back and spilled the beans on what was really going on in Europe.
Right, right. So what happened is, this is just from my area, since the Mafia was directly working with the Navy, and you had the Brooklyn Navy Yard there, who do you think was getting the contracts? Organized crime, obviously. They got a piece of the action.
Of course.
All right. So then they shut down the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and they moved it to Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and they called it Naval Air Development Center, War Minister. Now, does one think it's quite possible that the Mafia moved down with the Brooklyn Navy Yard that was getting all the contracts? Could that be possible? Of course it was. That's what happened. That's why we have so much organized crime in this area. They were here to begin with, through Moses, through the Annenbergs at Philly, but that really strengthened their control over southeastern Pennsylvania. All right. So next thing is, we're going to progress forward. So what happens is the next president, okay, do you have a question?
No.
Okay. So let's look at after LBJ leaves office, okay, Nixon wins, okay? Who should have won, actually, against JFK if it wasn't fixed to begin with. So Nixon basically has its entire cabinet selected for him at the Annenberg Center in Rancho Mirage, California, what I call Mob Springs. Other people call it Palm Springs. I'm not sure there's much difference between the two. And who was there picking the cabinet for him, including Henry Kissinger? Walter Annenberg. By the way, if you went to Rancho Mirage, California, you would find out the two neighbors of next door to them are none other than Frank Sinatra and Bob Hope. So what a coincidence. That ties it into Hollywood. As you can see that part of it. Now, you have the interview with Reverend Graham talking to Nixon and says, if we don't get control of the media, you know, the Jewish community is running, that this country is going to heck in a handbasket. Okay? And he also was, when he was being impeached, saying it's going to bring up that whole Bay of Pigs thing, which really was the code name for JFK assassination. Now, who was Nixon referring to with respect to control of the media? Have you ever been or heard about the Nixon Library in Yorba Linda, California?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever been there?
No.
Okay. So you walk right into the building.
I must have missed that opportunity.
And what do you see? You see the entire front exhibit of nothing but the honorarium work of Walter Annenberg, that Philadelphia gangster, okay, who worked with Courtmire to murder JFK. Okay? Then you see the honorarium plaques, you know, of big contributors. And one of them is Max Fisher. Max Fisher is the guy who ran Max Fisher School of Business, was identified as part of organized crime, going back to the Purple Gang, Mo Dalitz. And you can see, you know, who was actually behind, you know, who he was talking about. Okay? The other thing Max Fisher did is he created the Republican Jewish Coalition, which after he got older, he passed control on to, who was the guy who runs Victoria's Secret? I forget his name.
Oh, I know who you mean. Gosh. I can't think of his name either. But he's a tribe member, of course.
Right. And he's the power
keep
broker.
Talking, I will figure it out.
And he was the power broker for Mr. Epstein.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh
right.
Gosh. What a piece right. of garbage.
Right.
Wow.
Right. Now, another thing there is one can go on YouTube and look at the dedication of Wallace Annenberg, the daughter of Walter Annenberg, the granddaughter
Wexner.
Of... Wexner. Yeah, Les Wexner. Correct. Bingo.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. So there you can see the direct connections that evolved out of the Nixon administration. Okay. Now, just lost my thought on what I was just saying before. All right. With respect to Nixon, we see, you know, both the Annenbergs were there, and we see, you know, Max Fisher, Murder Incorporated, were there. Now, Walter Annenberg has a daughter, Wallace Annenberg, W-A-L-I-S, and she has a YouTube video, a couple of them. But one she shows her dedication in Hollywood, that she's a great benefactor there. And she identifies Rose Dunkelman, her aunt, as the founder of the Zionist Organization of Canada, and identifies her uncle, Ben Dunkelman, who worked directly with Ben Gurion to found the Nation of Israel.
Right?
Right. So there you see the direct connections of organized crime in America to the foundation of Israel.
Right. Wow. Okay, we'll be right back. Stay.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we play.
We are back with our guest, Art from Philly. Are you from there or are you still there?
I'm still here.
Could I change your name to Art in Philly?
That's fine. All right. Some important points here with the Nixon administration. Right,
I'm just a new progressive. I'm just a pain in the butt sometimes. Okay.
All right.
We're here with Art in Philly. His website is noplaceforcorruption.com.
Right. So it wasn't too far. You know, one of the things that JFK was in dispute with Ben Gurion of Israel was nuclear weapons. They wanted Israel not to have it. So lo and behold, that's, you know, it's assassinated in 63. And by 67, they have nuclear weapons. And how did they do it?
What a coincidence.
It was the Apollo affair, where Zalman Shapiro, one of the top members of the Zionist Organization of America, runs NUMIC Manufacturing, a nuclear fuel reprocessing plant near Pittsburgh, who has, Raphael Eaton, the head of the Israeli Defense Forces, meets with Zalman, and a few weeks later, they lose several hundred pounds of nuclear weapons-grade material that could be used to build bombs, who also was identified as the handler for Jonathan Pollard. So that's another a consequence of the JFK assassination that led into the Nixon administration. Now, going forward, who came next? Gerry Ford. Who was one of the major power brokers of Gerry Ford? Max Fisher, the founder of the Republican Jewish Coalition. And you can see how incestuous that is. Look at the Betty Ford Clinic. Where was that set up? Right inside the Annenberg Estate in Rancho Mirage, California, of all places in the world.
Amazing.
Right. Isn't that amazing? What a coincidence. Okay. I guess they like to play golf together. I'm sure that's part of the story. Okay. So we see, you know, basically that was the fix was in for making sure that Nixon, you know, left power without being impeached or prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now we progress. Okay, let's see. You know, Ford, you know, we already know about Clinton. Clinton rose to power, you know, I'm not going to go through it. You know, obviously, we can see that situation. What I'll focus in is, how did Obama rise to power? Okay. He ran Chicago of Annenberg, No Child Left Behind. Note I said Chicago of Annenberg.
Right.
He was introduced to the Annenbergs through Bill Ayers, one of the weathermen. And as a U.S. senator there, he ran a program for him for years. Now, what was No Child Left Behind about? Well, look at Wallace Annenberg. She's got the Annenberg Charter School in Los Angeles. We got another charter school by the Standard Pacific Home Builders in L.A. By the way, Herbie Barnes is a major player of the Bucks County Republican Party. He passed away. He was a power broker for Arlen Specter. One can see also that was the guy who got Robert Asher in as the head of the Pennsylvania Republican Party National Committee Man, a convicted felon from the Bud Dreyer case when our state treasurer blew his brains out. And also, it was Robert Asher was the power broker for Tom Ridge to rise to power.
Right.
Now,
yeah.
Right.
What a piece of garbage he was.
Right.
Is.
Yes. It still is. And
he's famous for when they were certain Congress people were receiving letters laced with. What was it?
Anthrax.
Anthrax. Right. And he's famous for going on national TV and saying, oh, don't worry anymore. There won't be any more of that. And a good friend of mine said, well, how does he know? Some of these politicians, they open their mouth and they let things slip. And if you're listening really closely, you'll pick up on these slips.
Correct.
because they're really not very bright people. They're just in it for what they can get out of it. They're
right. And there's two points. Two points with Tom Ridge. One is Cipro, which is the pharmaceutical that they use to treat somebody who's had anthrax poisoning.
Cipro, right? A terrible. Oh, that is so terrible. Cipro is one of the worst antibiotics that you can take. It will totally just destroy your immune system. It's one of the very worst. If you do a lot of checking into what it does to your intestinal tract, it is probably, excuse me, one of the worst things that you can take as far as medications. Excuse me.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
So who manufactures Cipro? Do you know?
I don't know, but you're going to tell us when you come back, right?
Right.
Okay, we'll be right back with Art in Philly.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
Alrighty. We are back with our guest, Art in Philly. And I would guess that Pfizer makes Cipro.
It's a Teva, T-E-V-A Pharmaceuticals, an Israeli-owned firm that's based, has a major headquarters in southeastern Pennsylvania, not 10 miles away from Merck Sharp & Dohme, and on the opposite direction, not 10 miles away from Pennington, New Jersey, where they found the contamination of military-level grade of anthrax, which killed one of the postal workers.
Oh, it's just a coincidence.
Right.
Right.
The same Merck Sharp & Dohme that set up the nuclear biological labs for the government down there at Fort Detrick.
Right.
Yeah. You know, right. Couldn't be a coincidence. You know, it's just those facts there, you know. So I'm sure Tom Ridge did know it wasn't going to happen anymore because he knew exactly who was involved with it.
But of course.
Somehow the name Teva Pharmaceutical, having military-level grade anthrax, how else were they able to build make Cipro to create a medication that could be used to treat it? How else would they be able to verify what it would do?
Right.
Right. Certainly indicates to me they had military-level anthrax. And given that they're only 10 miles away from where it was found, it would certainly indicate to me that's probably where it came from.
There's also, in Pennsylvania, I'm sure you're aware of this, the two communities, where the Israelis were stealing, radium and other things and secreting it out of the country. They destroyed, the land because they were housed in buildings that were not designed, and it was a taxpayer who had to come in and clean it up. Are you familiar with the two communities? We need to talk about that sometime in the future.
It's something I remember in the past. I think you're talking about the chemical company in Upper Bucks County where they had a major contamination that EPA came in.
Yes.
And, you know, left a big mess there.
Yeah. Right. And in another community too, was it Parker, let's see. I'd have to look at my notes, but we'll talk about that next time you're on.
Okay. All right. So we talked about No Child Left Behind, and what it really was is a front for organized crime through privatized public schools. Okay?
Right.
It's their entry point to create charter schools. As an example, why does Michael Milliken, a convicted felon in the Ivan Bosky scandal, why is he owning kinder care and, you know, back here is called Agora Child Charter Schools? Why is a convicted felon running cyber charter schools? You only have
one,
convicted
one
felons.
One must ask. Yes.
Right. So, let's go back to the story where I'm trying to go with. All right, so we see with Obama, what happened there and how he rose to power. One of the things he was going to do before he left, it was actually advertised in major news media, that he was going to set up the White House of the West. And where was he going to establish it? At the Annenberg Center in Rancho Mirage, California. All the places in the country. It had to be there, you know, where Ford was and, you know, all those other Chicago syndicate gangsters established their beachhead.
Yeah, he and Michael, right?
Right. Michael, who, are you Mexican or are you talking about somebody else?
His wife. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right, obviously. to be brief with time, I'll summarize it going forward. Now, who was his vice president? Joe Biden, okay?
Yes.
Under the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, after, you know, the Obama administration was over and Trump took over, what was Biden doing? He was making $800,000, on the lecture circuit at the University of Pennsylvania. Annenberg University of Pennsylvania. In the city of Philadelphia, the brotherly love city.
That just, isn't that so awful? The city of brother,
Right. And what was, what
you
part
had
of
to
the
bring
school,
that in, right?
Right.
Gosh.
And he was working at the University of Pennsylvania Annenberg School of Communications. Right. Okay. Now, who was in charge of one of the board directors of the Annenberg School of Communications? The number two guy at Comcast, David L. Cohen. Okay, who's a lobbyist? When Biden announces he's going to be running as a campaign for president of the United States, he starts it at the home of David L. Cohen in Mount Airy, Pennsylvania, inside the city of Philadelphia. That's where he starts it. Okay? And he says, you know, we're going to go after this hate law. So, you know, we want to basically destroy free speech is really what he's talking about.
Sure. As if it was, as if it actually existed anyway.
Right, right. And now what happens is the election comes about, okay? You heard about the dark money, I think, or shadow money, whatever you call it, and mm-hmm. I think you talked about it to some extent. Mm-hmm. Now, do you know anything about what Facebook did in Philadelphia?
Oh, I'm sure they did their usual. Well, Facebook is notorious for censoring things and changing things and running Facebook is awful. They just awful. I would never, well, it's a CIA operation in my opinion. I've always felt that way. But go ahead and tell us.
Well, it might be CIA, but I think it's more Mossad because of his close relationship with Netanyahu.
But right.
So, with respect to Philadelphia, it's known all the way back in the Rizzo administration that the Democratic wards basically can be bought off with what they call shadow money, dark money, where they pay for the voters to vote a certain way. So who's in charge of all the Democratic wards in the city of Philadelphia where the election was stolen? Who's the guy running all that, runs all the Democratic wards? And he's also the close head. He's number one guy right next to Ed Riddell, Fast Eddie. Okay, who I mentioned before in his corruption. David L. Cohen. Okay? Right. Now, another component with this is we had this guy at Comcast also, his name was Sam Katz. Okay? Sam was in dispute over the ownership of the Philadelphia Inquirer building, which I'm not sure if I mentioned it, but the Annenbergs owned the Inquirer building, 600 Market
Street. Surprise, surprise.
Right. You know, the Operation Mockingbird. And there was a dispute between two factions of organized crime. On one side was Jerry Lenfest, Sam Katz of Comcast. Okay? On the other side was George Norcross and Pat Dion of the Bucks County Republican Party. There was two factions there. They went to court, and what happened is a week after the Norcross and the Dion side lost that battle for ownership of it. They wanted to make it a mob casino. Is Sandcats takes a plane flight up to Boston, Beantown, and on takeoff his plane crashes, killing everybody. If you believe it was an accident, I believe it was a mob hit.
Of course it was a mob hit.
Right. All right, so one of the things, so basically the one that took over everything was Lenfest. Now, Lenfest has an interesting history. He used to run 17 magazine. And who did he work directly for 3 years before he became a multimillionaire, billionaire? None other than Walter Annenberg directly for years as his legal counsel. Okay?
Wow.
And then what he does is he sets up a cable company in the western part of Pennsylvania. And then he sells it off to who? Comcast. Makes himself a billionaire.
Wow.
Right. Right. So, you see the direct connection from what I said there of
right.
Operation Mockingbird going right to Comcast and right how they fix this election. Now, what's the other part of it? I mentioned about organized crime in the Jewish community being Bucks County. So they got this lady elected as Secretary of State, Kathy Bocovar, who then certifies the Pennsylvania election for Biden when it was still in dispute by the legislature. And she got fired for incompetence within a few weeks after that. If it was incompetence or even much worse than that, okay, maybe it came a direct order right down from Netanyahu and the Mossad to fix the election for us, for our favor. That's what I see. Okay. I could also show, you know, other parts of this conversation, you know, to talk about how they were directly covered, involved with the corrupt, the 9/11 commission also.
Mm-hmm.
And in that respect, what happened is you had Herbie Barnett, who I told you was directly connected with Herbert Walker Bush and Walter Annenberg. With the 9/11 commission, they pointed who? This happened a year before the 9/11. You had the Senate Committee of Permanent Investigation, who was appointed there, Arlen Specter. You had the House Committee of Permanent Investigation, who was there, Congressman Jim Greenwood, who gave us the corrupt story for Martha Stewart while Enron was burning the whole economy down to nothing.
Right.
And then you had on Specter's close buddy, Pat Meehan, who was then appointed as the head of the FBI Department of Justice to prosecute organized crime. So who's prosecuting organized crime? Bucks County Republican Party with direct ties to the Chicago Syndicate? Okay. And that's who was put in power for the 9/11 commission a year before it happened.
Right. they were just so right. perceptive. They knew that they had to get this commission together, right? Oh, gosh.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. Right. Let's move to the other organization. What do you know about the Friends of the Israeli Defense Forces, FIDF.org or .com? I forget which one it is.
Oh, I don't know. I just know that AIPAC has control over hundreds. It isn't just one. It's a lot. It's and they're not registered as foreign agents. And they run Congress. They run America. They run the press. They run Hollywood. There are other people claim that, oh gosh, it's the Muslims who run Hollywood. And when I hear that claim, I have to laugh. Oh, I just laugh.
Right.
But people make that claim. Go ahead.
So if you remember about 9/11, before it happened, you had Silverstein.
Right.
With Netanyahu.
I did, yes.
Like almost every week for a year before the 9/11.
Okay. Right. And there was a lawsuit that ended in April, because the Port Authority wanted to go in and take the asbestos out because, people, the rentals in the towers were declining and they needed to get rid of the asbestos. And asbestos is safe unless it's airborne. Right. And they could not get a license to demolish the buildings. They were in a crux. They couldn't do anything. Silverstein and his partner decided to lease the buildings. And which they did, and they doubled the insurance and all this stuff, knowing all of the ramifications. And then, just very soon after that, gosh, that was terrible, terrible, terrible. People from Saudi Arabia, 19 people who were still alive after they crashed into the towers. They were still alive. And, and it was not controlled demolition. I will never accept that. It was directed to energy. If the towers had collapsed into the bathtub, it would have flooded Manhattan. In fact, they did not take in any heavy equipment into that bathtub, which is something that they constructed before in order to, otherwise if they just constructed those towers, it just wouldn't have worked. They needed to build a structure underneath. Well, after the buildings were destroyed, they did not take any heavy equipment into the bathtub because they didn't want to crack it. And yet in the same breath they're saying, oh yeah, the buildings collapsed. That's a big lie. They did not collapse. They were directed energy Tesla type. And it was John D. Trump, Donald's uncle, who was called in to evaluate Tesla's work and research. And basically what he said, oh, move along, there's nothing to see here. Meanwhile, the government absconded with all of the research and everything, which the government has been doing since Herbert Hoover was in charge of he was Secretary of Commerce, and they've been stealing patents and ideas from the public for years and years. An independent person comes forward with a patent, they don't allow him to have it. I did a story about it, it's about a guy by the name of George Horvat. It's on my website. And they literally stole his patent, put it into use, and that's why you see all of the highways that are collecting money, the toll booths on the highways and the tracing of where everybody travels. You have GPS associated with the ability to track people. That all goes back to patents that the government stole from George Horvat. So those are just backstories.
Right. Right. So the point, if you look at the trend of Israeli defense forces, they get chapters throughout various cities in USA. But there's two chapters in New York. And the main one in New York is the Silverstein Group.
Yes!
Right.
It's always a coincidence, isn't it? Coincidence! Doggone!
Right. So you got direct connections to the Silverstein Group, to the Friends of Israeli Defense Forces, hence the Mossad, and you got Mr. Silverstein meeting directly with Benjamin Netanyahu, again, direct connections to the State of Israel.
Right.
Okay. Right.
This is so much fun to talk about this. Well, it's not fun. It's just really interesting, educational, and I love it. All right, we'll be back with Art in Philly after a word from our sponsors. All right, we are back with our guest, Art in Philly. His website is noplaceforcorruption.com. The time has just flown by. We've got to do this again really soon. Every time we talk, I think, Oh, I've got to have him on more. You're just full of really incriminating information.
Right. All right, so I was going to focus in on another point.
Okay.
One of the things when 9/11 occurred is it basically covered up a major financial mess that the country was in.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Building 7. Ooh.
Well, here's the interesting thing about Building 7. It destroyed the evidence for prosecution of the criminals of Enron to some extent.
Yes.
So Ken Lay got prosecuted, right?
Yes.
Jeff Skilling of McKinsey Consulting got prosecuted. Okay. Let's remember also the other guy at McKinsey Consulting, Rajiv Gupta, the convicted felon. Okay.
Yeah.
That premier consulting firm that just won with Italy to provide all their, you know, analysis and financial consulting for their situation over there.
Yes.
So, but there was one person that didn't get prosecuted, and he was a convicted felon, Michael Milliken. Okay? Michael Milliken was, you know, directly involved with Enron, but nothing happened to him. So what happened is Ken Lay and Milliken approached Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was running to be governor of California against Lieutenant Governor Bustamante.
And he was a boy toy for the rich and famous. Oh, that's
Milliken?
Story.
Right. Yeah. So as a result of talking to Arnold Schwarzenegger, he got elected, that he says, if I become governor of California, I'll drop all the prosecutions against him. So nothing happened to Milliken as a result of that. Who's now, you know, basically going around giving financial advice to all these people how to make billions of dollars. Where did he make his money? He made his money from the 1982 Tax Reform Act under Bush to allow mergers and acquisitions to occur. And what did he do? He used junk bond financing for companies as an example. I'm not sure if he did this one, where GE goes in, buys up RCA, Record Company of America, and finances the deal using junk bonds. Okay? Then what happens is when he gets the merger done, he uses the pension funds of the employees that are not fully invested, gets rid of them, and uses cash to pay off the debt. That's how that deal works. Okay. Now, with respect to that one merger of RCA and GE, I was actually up on Wall Street in 87 when that happened. And the guys next to me were from Kidder Peabody, and the dialogue went like this. Which is the lunchtime detective next to me. And they says, I can't believe where that money came from. What do you mean? It came up from Switzerland. Yeah, but it was wired from Medellin Cartel, you know, Pablo Escobar, right up to Switzerland. So, Kidder Peabody, after the merger, Jack Welch then renamed it GE Capital, which were the ones that actually paid for the World Trade Center mess when the buildings collapsed. Okay? And what did he do?
Yeah.
All the top executives of Kidder Peabody were paid off with what they called the Golden Glove, shut up and take your money, get out of here. And the bond trader set up the deal was made the head of GE Capital. It was kind of interesting to see that the other mafia actually was involved with GE. Okay.
Wow. Art, we've run out of time. We need to do this again really soon.
All right, you got it.
Hey, thanks so much.
All right.
Enjoy the rest of the weekend. Take care. Take care, listeners. Talk with you next week. Bye-bye.